Hello, everyone. I'm Trent Luce. Welcome to another edition of Rural Routes, the program where we gather every day at this time. Well, Chelsea Boonstra, we do it Monday through Friday anyway. And what we do when we gather is discuss the issues between rural and urban America. What usually happens is that I keep track of the people I meet. I scour social media when I get the opportunity to look for people that I think would be interesting guests. And every once in a while, somebody will send me a note and say, Trent, I met this person. You really need to get him or her on the air. That is exactly why Chelsea Boonstra is coming to us today via Skype, if I know what I'm doing, from Manitoba. How are you, Chelsea?
I'm good, thank you.
Dr. Kevin Folta is the one who called me from Florida. He said, Trent, you have got to get this fireball on the air. Why are you a fireball, Chelsea? Are you fired up?
Yeah, I'm pretty excited. It's been a little bit of a whirlwind for me, but I'm excited where things are going.
You grew up on a dairy farm. You are currently still involved with the dairy farm, but an agronomist and work with plants and soils on a daily basis. Is that fair to say?
Yep.
And you absolutely despise technology like GMOs.
No.
negative, Houston. Oh, I should say negative.
I was
Winnipeg.
Wondering if that's supposed to be a. I was kind of thinking. I was like, "Is this a trick question?" Or
wait a minute.
What am I getting myself into?
I've been misled here. What's going on?
Yeah.
What do you do as an agronomist? I mean, that seems like the stupidest question I could ask. But what do you do as an agronomist? I know what agronomists do, but what do you do?
So basically my spring kind of starts out and I start meeting with farmers and I basically start getting their fertilizer recommendations ready and the fertilizer starts going out. And basically once the crops start growing, I've helped them pick their seed. I start going, I scout for bugs, for diseases, for weeds. And I also do pre-harvest staging, things like that. And now basically right now I'm doing some soil testing, meeting with farmers, just seeing how things are going, maybe what they did and didn't like with maybe some of their chemicals or seed and maybe what they can improve on for next year and just basically be help to them in any way.
And I think that's why it's important for us to walk through what an agronomist does because, I mean, I say that my premise, Chelsea, is connecting rural and urban America. And I'm including North America in that, by the way, just in case you're wondering. Mm-hmm. And I think that most people who are not involved in agriculture, they hear terms like chemicals and fertilizer and the antibiotics in the livestock world. And they think farmers just use as much as they possibly can. It is mm-hmm. precision agriculture, and you're doing those soil tests so that you know exactly what every inch by inch, in some cases, of a field needs.
Yeah, I think that's the big hit that's sort of the problem. You know, everybody, they hear these big words and they sort of just assume the worst without maybe asking someone from the industry. Instead, they're looking things up on the internet. And, you know, as a dairy farmer, everybody always just assumes we're bad people. And to me, I think it's sort of heartbreaking because we do the best we absolutely can. You know, we can't put manure on past a certain date and we can't overload our soils. And, you know, we in Canada, there's no antibiotics or hormones allowed in our milk, not like the States. But we do care about our animals and our crops, we care about them too. I mean, it may just be a plant, but now the way technology is, because of GMOs and technology, we're actually putting on less chemical than we would have maybe 30, 40 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Okay, back up the trolley car. I think I know what you said, but I want to get this straight.
Mm-hmm.
We don't allow antibiotics in the milk.
We use
antibiotics for cows, and I think you were alluding to RBST. We do have, I think, about 15% of the cows in the United States that still do use the technology recombinant bovine somatotropin. You do not in Canada. Is that what you meant to say?
Yeah, no, like basically in our milk, we're not allowed to say basically put any hormones. We can't give our cows any hormones, or basically any, if they find a trace of any antibiotics at all, your milk gets dumped. So, I mean, say you had a milking cow.
We're the same way with antibiotics.
Pardon?
We're in the States, the antibiotic rule is the same.
Okay, well, like, even, okay, yeah, I wasn't sure. I just kind of, there's a whole bunch of stuff going out here in Canada, just for anybody listening. It's just because there's been so much that I've been hearing in the media, and everyone's like, oh, you know, I'm buying antibiotic-free milk and hormone-free milk, and it's like, well, really, if you're paying more for it, you're just wasting your money, because it's by law in Canada that milk can't contain it. So
yeah, well, milk naturally contains hormones, but the cows cannot be given recombinant somatropin, which it's no wonder that the consumer's confused, because we use marketing campaigns that actually do confuse them.
Mm-hmm.
I got to ask you a fundamental question. Most people that I know that grow up on a dairy farm absolutely love dairying, and they would not become an agronomist. They would be a part of the dairy. How did that happen?
So basically, for us, my dad and uncle, they bought the farm when they were pretty young. So they bought it in 2001, and now it's 2016, obviously. And my dad and uncle are 47 and 44, so they're still quite young. My dad, through university, he told me, I want you to get some off-farm experience.
Oh.
And, you know, I want you to get your name out in the industry. And they all know that I do eventually want to come back home and farm. They're just so young right now. They just want us to maybe just do something different for a little bit.
So, us meaning you have siblings.
Yeah, there's three siblings. I've got two other siblings, sorry, in my family, and my uncle, they have four kids.
Oh, wow. There's a bunch of the second generation.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I mean, the youngest one's around 11 years old, so there's still lots of time for everyone to sort of decide what they're going to be doing.
But you'll have gotten rid of quota by then, so who knows what'll happen. It could be a huge dairy by that time.
Oh, man, I hope we do not lose quota.
Oh, do you want to have that discussion?
Pardon?
Do you want to have that discussion on whether I think quota is a good thing or not?
Don't get me started on that one.
Yeah. Well, that could go either way. Well, I ask you the question about why you're an agronomist, because I can tell from the few posts, the videos I've seen, and just a little bit that you and I visited here today, that you still have that same passion that most people who grew up on a dairy have for dairying, and now it makes total sense that it's a great idea. And my hat's off, and kudos to your father and uncle, probably, for saying, you kids need to go get some real-world experience before you come back here and get indoctrinated to the Boonstra way only. That's a great idea.
Yeah, no, and I mean, we're hoping that, I mean, most of us are going to want a farm. I mean, with more of us, the farm's going to be getting larger, so there's hopefully always going to be a spot for us. But, I mean, it's been nice, you know. My dad appreciates me a little bit more when I'm not around, and I appreciate him a little more as well. So it works out really good, and there's stuff that I'm learning at work that I can bring back and take home to the farm and apply as well, so... Mm-hmm.
The one thing that I will say, and I'm saying this for the benefit of our listeners here in the States, for the most part, Canadian farms are the way that the U.S. farms used to be pre-1990 with the diversification. So if you're a dairyman in the United States, you almost have become to the point now, Chelsea, where you only dairy, and maybe you buy all of your feedstuffs, where all of the farms, and Ontario's wonderful for this, just small farms. They have some broilers, maybe some egg-laying hens. They've got maybe a milk cow, milk cows, 50, 60 cows, and they also have some sows. I mean, the diversification still exists north of the border.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought it was worth pointing that out for our listeners down here in the States. Chelsea Boonstra, our guest. She is an advocate for agriculture. She continues to be on the front lines, finding the places to tell the story. We'll find out where that happens in Manitoba and across the board when we come back with more Rural Route after this.
All right, now, marketing cattle the superior way, almost doing this in a chant form. Superior Livestock Auction will have the auction in a chant form tomorrow on a red shirt Friday, 22,000 head of cattle selling. It stems from the historic Fort Worth Stockyards in Texas. You know, I should get down there. I've not been to the Stockyards for quite some time, and I've not been to a Superior sale for quite some time. You don't need to go there to be a part of it. That's the big, the whole issue right there. Selling this week, Holsteins, Jerseys, Florida calves, breeding stock, calves from around the entire country. Starts at 7:30 with the Superior Sunrise, the video auction at 8 o'clock. Be on the seats, in your house, Dish Network, Channel 232. I'm Trent Luce, SuperiorLivestock.com. Find your wrap.
Welcome back to Rural Routes. I'm Trent Luce. We are crossing the border again today. Usually it's Wendell Shum joining us from Ontario. We have moved west. Manitoba is what Chelsea Boonstra calls home. Where are you from, say, Winnipeg? Because I go to Winnipeg every year. I think you're north, aren't you?
We're actually a little bit, northwest from Winnipeg. We're about half an hour west.
Oh, my goodness. So you're not far at all from, what's the town I speak in every year? That's awful.
Pardon?
I'm talking to myself.
Oh.
Every May, I go to Winnipeg and then go speak at, oh, my goodness, I'm having a mind blank, and I can't believe it. But it's about 30 miles from Winnipeg to the southwest, so it's not far.
Okay. Okay.
That'll hit me. Anyway, what are the avenues that you're finding effective in communicating technology, agronomy, and agriculture?
Sorry, I missed the beginning there.
What are the avenues that you're using to tell our story?
So basically what I'm using is I'm using a ton of social media. I'm on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, as well as YouTube. Basically what happened is I created and shared a video I'd made for school, which at the time was when a lot of people were bashing the agriculture industry, and it made me want to show it that much more. And basically since then, my whole world's kind of blown up, and I've been asked to do podcasts with you and Kevin Fulton. I'm currently in the making of doing another video, and I'm trying to show as many pictures on Instagram and Twitter and on Facebook as well, just to get the messages out there and also ask consumers maybe what they'd like to hear or what they'd like to see.
What is the feedback that you're getting that they want to hear more about?
Well, you know, I haven't really heard, like, much. I mean, my Facebook account is where I was doing most of that of, and I haven't been doing that as much lately. But I think it's more that people want to actually see you out there and just telling the truth. They don't want to hear you getting angry and telling them this is how it is. They want you to basically go out there, show them, video it, and put it on there so they can see with their own eyes this is the truth.
And this is the video that I believe I saw somewhere, maybe on your social media. It's in your family's dairy operation.
Yes.
Do you think that what I struggle with, I've been at this 17 years, Chelsea.
Mm-hmm.
And what I feel like I'm still not as good as I should be is it's pretty easy to get the choir's attention.
Yep.
But to get that person in Winnipeg that maybe hears all of the junk and hears all of the noise and doesn't really know where to turn, we're not still getting to the right people. Is social mm-hmm. media an avenue to get that done?
Oh, sorry, you cut out there at the end.
Is social media the avenue to get that done, or do we need to do it face-to-face?
You know what? I think you need a little bit of both, just depending on the people, because I think everybody should be an advocate for agriculture, but if you're not doing it the right way, then that creates those barriers for us. So, I mean, some people are better at explaining things face to face and like having someone there that's able to listen. While some people, you know, somebody might be getting angry over social media. And for some people, that's just their time to fire right back. But when that happens, you basically need to sit there and calm down and explain it in a calm way. We can't react and add fuel to the fire.
I see that a lot, where people in agriculture have never really been challenged on the things that they do day in and day out. And then when somebody challenges you, it's easy to lose your control, your composure. And particularly on when you're typing it instead of talking to somebody. You say things you would never say to somebody in person.
Yeah, no, I see lots of that, and it's not even just about agriculture in general, just anything. And it's actually crazy, some of the stuff you see that people write. You know, I mean, you want to get worked up right away, but I mean, it's just not the way to do it, because the consumers, they don't want to listen to you then. Then they just assume you're the bad people. And I mean, I know this is our career, but it's also our way of life. And, you know, without the consumers, basically, this wouldn't be possible. So we have to maintain that relationship with them so they understand what we are doing. We've been doing it for years and years, and we just need to get that across some way.
Do you feel that GMO technology is the greatest challenge in education we have?
I'd say that, along with almost animal care. GMOs definitely is really, really up there, but there's lots of things I see on the care that just any farmer in general has for an animal. It's just so upsetting to see the videos on. I've seen tons on Facebook bashing the dairy industry, and I mean, some of them I can't even watch because it's disgusting to watch. I mean, the GMO is really, you're just talking about plants. But the animals, for some people, that takes it to the next step, because there's videos of somebody actually hurting an animal, when in reality, you know, most farms aren't really like that.
How do we explain to consumers that those are staged?
See, that's where the hard part comes in. I mean, we're not going to change everybody's mind. And I mean, we're not going to, I mean, Rome wasn't built in a day either. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we've got to start somewhere. Everybody usually puts it off. Mm-hmm. I mean, even if you can get some one person asking questions saying, you know, why is that person doing that? And you can explain it to them, and just getting them thinking a little bit and maybe saying, oh man, maybe that isn't true. You know, just changing that one person's mind or getting them to think a little bit. Just as a little bit of start.
You hit the nail on the head, because what I have found is that people will never say, oh, wow, I was wrong. But when they say, oh, I never thought about it like that, that's a success story. That's what you're striving to get, is to make people think about things in a light where they've never thought about them before.
Yeah.
And every day, try to find that way to do that. I question myself the effectiveness of social media outside our own circles. Because what I have found, and Chelsea, I've been in the trenches with some of these folks, many of them, by the way, from Canada. There seems to be a fostering of Canadian hate right now, particularly for animal rights, more centered around Quebec and more so than Manitoba, but it's still Canada. In the minute that you hold somebody accountable to something that they have said, they label you a troll, and boom, they're gone. So if you say something they don't want to hear, you're a troll. Bye. I don't want to hear any more of it.
Yeah. Yeah, those are the people that it's hard to deal with. I mean, there's some people who are going to be like that, and you yourself are going to have to deal with it. When I actually started out with Kevin Folta, he had suggested to me to make separate accounts for everything, because, you know, sometimes things get hard and there's some people who don't like you. I remember a long time ago, even when I just before any of this had even happened, I had shared a video of a calf, and somebody did not like it at all. And I mean, at the time I was just like, oh my gosh, like, what do I do? Like, people are hating on me on social media. So, I mean, it's kind of nice to have maybe a separate account away from your personal account just to make things a little bit easier. If, you know, things maybe start getting heated up, there's always going to be those people that aren't going to like you. Not everyone's going to like you. And some of us just have to accept that fact when you're going out in the world, basically showing yourself off to people.
We probably should do this because even though in our circles, Kevin Folta is he's a celebrity in our circles. Mm-hmm. Many of my listeners don't have a clue who we're talking about. Kevin Folta is at the University of Florida. He is a plant biologist. He's been on this program a couple of times. He's really been the go-to guy for explaining genetic modification and technologies. And he's been the go-to guy so much that at one point in time, he had too much of the attacks himself and kind of went off the grid. He's back now in full form and making a huge difference. And I assume was as much as responsible for an inspiring Chelsea Boonstra as anybody who's joining us today. And that's why we have her, because Kevin said, Trent, you've got to get her on. We're halfway through. We'll take a break. We'll come back and talk about more educating every single person, one day, one person at a time. One after this.
That's correct. I know you are one of Superior Livestock. Yes, is a sponsor of the program, and just because you work for Superior sponsorship, we sold our calves to Superior this year, and that's what we'll continue to do next year. Just basically connecting the dots and doing a good job for the consumer and getting a premium price for what we do every day.
And that's what you do with the pork, too. I mean, you connect the consumer to a Duroc, sorry, they really don't care. But the fact that you go to the effort to make sure that there's a high-quality end product here resonates with them.
Welcome back to Rural Routes. I'm Trent Luce alongside, she's in the neighboring country. You know, Manitoba's not that. If I can get to Winnipeg quicker than I can get to Dallas, Texas. And I live in the middle of the country. It's just a quick trip, right? 11 hours I can be in. It's about the same both ways, actually. But in 11 hours, I drive to Winnipeg as often as I can when I'm speaking up there. Have you been to Nebraska?
To be honest, I don't think so. We've drove to Florida and Texas, but I don't think we've ever actually gone through Nebraska. So,
you maybe did, probably not. So you drove down Interstate 29 to Kansas City. You were riding on the border, and then you shot off through Kansas. Is that the extent of your trips to the U.S., Florida and Texas?
Texas, Florida, we go to North Dakota all the time, and we've went to Palm Springs and Las Vegas this winter, and that's basically about it, I'd say. But we've done Florida and Texas a whole bunch of times.
And North Dakota is your favorite state in the States?
I'm not picking favorites. Don't want to get on anybody's bad side there, but
Chelsea,
I'm going to make you pick. I don't know. I loved California.
Cool.
I thought it was beautiful. It was really busy though. And I love Florida. I like hot places.
You live in Manitoba.
I know. Believe me, if I can move away for the winter, I most definitely would.
Yeah. Like Dick Scobie. Do you know Dick Scobie?
No.
He owns the Winnipeg Sales Barn.
Okay.
And he goes roping to Arizona every winter.
Okay.
And it's funny to talk to Dick because I go see him every year in May when I'm up there. It's funny to talk to him because he talks like somebody from Nebraska that goes to Arizona in the winter. Well, Dick does that and lives in Manitoba. It just seems a little strange. I don't like hot places. I love North Dakota. I like Manitoba, although I like Saskatchewan the best in Canada.
Yeah, I could live where it's warm.
Yeah.
I mean, not too warm, but warm.
Well, you know what California did this week?
No.
They put in place a, we'll call it a carbon tax, for lack of a better term, a tax on beef items because cows are destroying the environment.
Is that for real?
Yeah, they signed it into law this week.
Oh my gosh.
My point is, California is not a place you want to be.
Jeez.
I marvel. Every time I go to California, I do not know how the farmers and ranchers in California, I'll just extend that to all business. I don't know how all business owners deal with what they have to deal with day in and day out and continue to operate in California. It's unbelievable to me that they get it done. It's crazy.
Yeah, I know when we rent even, I know there's tons of rules down there, but I didn't know it was that extensive.
Yeah, it's they've had a carbon tax for quite some time, so I don't want to mislead anybody. But just this week, Jerry Brown, the governor, signed into law a special tax on beef items because of cows' contribution to climate change. There are a bunch of whack jobs, Chelsea. You don't want to go to California.
It's beautiful, though. It's beautiful.
That's why there's 38 million people there.
I know. Oh, believe me, I know when I was on the interstate.
Yeah. What did you think of Vegas?
It was busy. I don't like busyness, So I can be very impatient sometimes. I mean, it was cool. Kudos to people that can live there. But for me, it's something maybe a couple-day thing. Couldn't do it for probably more than a week.
You saw that as being busier than L.A.?
No, that wasn't as busy as L.A. L.A. was insane.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, we got that geographical thing all fixed. But, hey, if you want to make a living advocating for agriculture, L.A. is a great place for you to go do it.
Probably, but I mean, man, I don't even know where I'd start there.
I had a great event in L.A. once. It was Ag Day L.A.
And, okay.
Yep. I had 300 first and second graders, and I did not address all of those, but I did address all of the teachers, and it was a great event. I really felt like I made a difference that day because you mark every day to either make a difference or not when it comes to educating people, and that day I felt like I made a difference.
Jeez, that's a lot of kids.
It's a lot of kids, but like a half of 1% of the first graders in Los Angeles.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Craziness.
That's awesome, though, that you got to do that. I mean, I know, like, here in Manitoba, we are actually right now, it's our Egg in the Classroom has been putting on something that it actually brings, I think it's grade 4 and 5s for 3 days. They come in and basically we start talking to them and there's a whole bunch of stations, and everybody's got something there. Basically, I was at the Farm Business Station, so we got to explain to kids basically how farming itself works. You know, the farmer's got to borrow money, it's got to spend money to buy all the fuel and the chemical, and it's got to buy crop insurance. And you know, some farmers have a good year, some farmers have a bad year, and some farmers have an okay year, and sometimes farmers don't make much money, which is also another big thing out there, that farmers are loaded and all this stuff. And I think some of the kids, it was actually kind of funny to see their reactions, because they're like, well, what does the farmer do in the winter then if he doesn't have any money? So I was like, he's basically got to start over again and got to go borrow some money. So, I mean, it's nice that it actually sort of gets the kids thinking a little bit. So it's nice that they do that.
That's a great opportunity. You get to do that often?
Well, I did it last year in Brandon, which is about 2 hours west of Winnipeg, and I got to do it this year as well. They really only do things like that basically when school is on, and they basically just notify people when they need volunteers, so I try to help out as best as I can.
Mm-hmm. What are the crops that farmers are planting in Manitoba?
For the most part, people are planting canola, wheat, soybeans is brand new for some people. us dairy farmers, we are growing alfalfa, and we are also growing corn.
Silage corn?
Silage and high moisture.
Oh, sure. Very little number two yellow corn that's grown and harvested like we do here, right?
Yeah. There's some people that do it. I mean, it's not as common for people to be growing corn like that, but it is starting to be a little bit more common.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know this or not, but 2016 is going to be one of the worst economic years for farmers in the States. Most commodities from milk to pork to chickens to even now beef, wheat, corn, soybeans, which is the main corridor of the middle of the U.S.'s breadbasket, if you'll let me say that, in agriculture, all of those prices are in the tank. What is the economic outlook for the Manitoba and the Canadian farmer in 2016?
I mean, I guess it depends who you talk to. I'd say things are okay. I mean, with us dairy, we've got the quota, so supply management, for some people who don't know what that is, it's basically we have to pay to be able to milk our cows. That way the consumers and the producers are both getting a stable price. And so for us in that aspect, I'd say the dairy's good. The beef prices, they've dropped a little bit since I'd say the beginning of the year. Soybean prices are pretty good. Canola prices are decent. Wheat's about average.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if you got an overall good crop, you'll probably be happy. But it depends where you are in the province. Some people are so wet, they're just shaking their heads. So,
Manitoba has had a series of years that have been extremely wet, haven't you?
Yes, depending where you are. I know for us, we missed so much of the rain, which we are so thankful for, and so sorry for the farmers that did get hit by tons of the rain, because I had seen pictures and I just couldn't believe it. But yeah, like especially we're on clay loam soil, so when you get a really wet year, you can't really do that much.
I wonder why soybean prices are good and they're not good here. Well, I would think there would be more parallel prices to what we have.
I'm trying to think, is there maybe like what's the word I'm looking for? I can't think of the word. But the other day when I think I checked, they were at $11.50.
Mm-hmm. So $11.50 Canadian.
Yeah.
Which I think you're about 70% of our dollar today. Is that correct?
To be honest, I am not totally sure. I've not been keeping up with that.
When I was there in May, it was 70%. I don't know if it's changed.
It's been all over the place lately. I haven't been going to the States lately, so I kind of haven't been keeping in check with that. Just kind of in the farming zone for a little bit, so.
One U.S. dollar is $1.32 Canadian, so that's 68%.
Yeah.
Hasn't changed much this summer. Let's see. Oh, my goodness. Look where I'm at on time. We got to take a break. Chelsea Boonstra, our guest. We'll get back to the nitty-gritty. Maybe we'll talk about soil health and organic matter when we return with the agronomist and the ag advocate from Manitoba after this.
Keep charging on. That's what any good battalion does, and there is no better cause than what the All-American Beef Battalion does. For more than 8 years now, we've been there to say thank you to the men and women who come home from Afghanistan, Iraq, wherever it might be, that the evil forces are raining down on human beings. So we say thank you with a one-pound ribeye, cheesy potatoes, corn, a dinner roll, and a dessert. That takes money, about $12 per person. We have a couple of feeds coming up in October. That's why it would be appreciated if you could help out just a bit. www.steaksfortroops.com to get the latest details, and you will find out if you go there that 100% of the donations go to the cause. $0 go to administration. This is a volunteer effort. Would you volunteer to help? Thank you. Steaksfortroops.com. I said that, but it's good to remind you.
Welcome back to Rural Routes. I'm Trent Luce. Kelsey Boonstra joining us from Manitoba. We haven't talked a lot about agronomy. Do you like that?
I love it. I mean, it's what I do, so I hope I like it. But yeah, I do. I think it's a big part of farming that maybe lots of people don't really actually know about that exists.
It dawns on me that I told myself in 2016 I was going to spend more time talking about soil health, and I haven't really done that. So I'm going to use you to bring me back to what I made my own little promise to be. Have you personally seen improvements in soil health? How long have you been an agronomist?
I actually started just back in May. I just graduated school in May, so not too long.
So it's a little hard to have a timeline then, isn't it?
Yep.
But you rub shoulders with people that have been doing this for years. Can you tell us about, how would you explain, if you were going to go speak to a high school class in Winnipeg about soil health and organic matter and proper fertilization, where would you start?
So I would basically say, before a farmer actually goes out to the field and starts planting his crop, I'd say the base foundation of farming would be to soil test. And, we do three different depths depending on what the farmer wants and what the farmer is planting. And then basically what we do is we help that farmer. We see, what is the pH of that soil? Some of them just like to see what's in the soil, but not actually maybe put anything in. So like the micronutrients like copper and zinc and magnesium. But, we check for the main ones. So nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, and usually sulfur. And then in those tests, we always check for organic matter. So basically I would tell them what that is when the farmer's putting things back into soil, like the stubble. Or some farmers do green manure crops, or basically they'd grow something like feed, so almost like alfalfa or maybe an oats type mixture, and they'd basically just put it in the ground that adds to the organic matter in the soil. And I mean, you want to have a high organic matter. I mean, you don't want it too low. The higher, the better. The blacker the soil, the more organic matter you do have. What I like to tell people, too, is it's easier to maintain your soil health than to build it back up. Building up organic matter or the nutrients itself, it's so hard to build up over time. You don't just put it in one season and all of a sudden, everything's back to normal. If all of a sudden your soils start dwindling down in, say, phosphorus, you're not just going to put some back in there and all of a sudden you're going to have it back to be hunky-dory next season. I think lots of farmers think soil testing is a useless tool, but I like to think of it as the base foundation for it, because it's basically you can see what you have, what you maybe need to improve on, and it's just where you start.
Cover crops have never been a bigger thing in the States, and that would be comparable to what you just called a green manure crop.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, they're not super common here either. Some people might do it if maybe their soils are super, super low in organic matter and just want to add things back in. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it just depends on your operation. I mean, when you're putting in a cover crop like that, you're not making money that year off of it either. So, I mean, some farmers don't like to do that. They want to have an income at the end of the year. So, I mean, it just depends.
And you've had that other environmental factor where you talked about the pH, and pH basically is providing water holding capacity. And where you've had so much water, your higher pH soils have probably been tougher for you to manage with all the water.
Yeah, for us, I would say, we're pretty lucky. Somehow we've never really had an issue with the pH from what I've understood. I mean, I know there's some places out west of Manitoba, closer by the Saskatchewan border, that they used to be so dry, and they actually, the past couple of years, I'd say probably 10, 15 years, they've been so wet. The salinity has increased, and now you can drive along the fields. And I remember last summer, I had asked my boss, and I said, someone's spreading lime all over those fields. And it was just the alkali was so bad that the field edges are actually white in spots.
It's tough to maintain a proper nutrient balance in that environment.
Yeah, and I mean, there's nothing you can really do about that either. I mean, you try and till up the land, but you don't want to plant there because nothing's going to grow. And I mean, putting fertilizer in those spots, you don't want to do that either because it's basically just a waste of money. It's hard. There's nothing you can actually really do for mm-hmm. salinity. And that's the hard part.
My trips, which would have been the last 7 years to Manitoba, I remember everybody doing full tillage. I don't remember anybody doing what we would consider minimum or no-till.
Actually, you know what? Out west, by basically the Saskatchewan border, mm-hmm. out by Melitta area, Pipestone and Souris, there's lots of that. But now, since they've been so wet lately, they've been doing more, I'd say, minimum tillage. But basically, for a long time, it's basically zero.
And the minimum tillage in wet years would be just to create some aeration and dry the soils out?
Yeah, basically.
We know nothing about canola. What can you tell us that is of interest of canola?
Well, just from my perspective, canola is beautiful. It looks so pretty when it's blooming. But now that soybeans are actually here, canola is starting to be less of an interest to people, to farmers, from what I am seeing. It's a crop that I'd say you have to treat like a princess. It doesn't like to get its feet wet, and it requires, you know, you've usually got to spray for flea beetles, and you got to put a couple applications of herbicide on, and you've usually got to do a fungicide application. You know, the yields, we haven't always been seeing the yields increasing as much. Some people we've seen have been going around 45, and this year I've heard of some people going under 20. So, I mean, that's not what you want to see out here when you're spending so much money on inputs and not really getting a high output. So, soybeans are starting to be really popular because, I mean, here they're new, so we're not really having disease or pest problems right now. So they're a low input crop, and people are really starting to like that. People are basically, I'd say, just keeping canola in their rotation just to have that variation.
You're not very optimistic about the future of canola with soybeans coming in and being a bigger part of the mix.
Yeah, I honestly, like some people I talk to, they're just not impressed with the way the yields are going
right.
and the price of seed. I mean, soybeans are so much easier to manage right now anyway, but I do keep reminding people, you know, you have to keep your herbicide rotations okay, and you basically, you got to manage your crop rotations in general because, you know, we could end up like the States where we're getting a whole bunch of pest problems or weed resistance and a whole bunch of stuff like that. And I mean, people also don't know that the soybeans are taking the phosphorus out of the soil. They're not, if you were actually to put phosphorus down with the seed, it wouldn't use it up, but it's taking phosphorus from the soil. So that's something else that the farmers need to keep in mind as well. It's a lot of them aren't really thinking about, but trying to keep that in mind as well.
Mm-hmm. You maybe don't have, well, you have alfalfa, so you
yep.
have other nitrogen fixing crops, but soybeans, canola does not work.
Nope.
Does not do nitrogen.
No.
Yeah, and that was going to be my next question, and I think you answered it. Glyphosate weed resistance, you're mm-hmm. not seeing that currently?
In some parts of Manitoba, yes, there is resistance. Some weeds are resistant to glyphosate. I'd say some farmers are trying to manage it by doing tank mixing and doing herbicide rotations. But, I mean, there's some farms where it's starting to be difficult for them, and now it's an eye-opener. I'd say in the area where I'm from, in the Interlake, we're okay. Some people might want to start thinking about it, and they're not. But as of right now, we haven't had an issue with it.
Hmm. Chelsea, what have we have a minute and a half. What have we not addressed that you think we should at least let people know to think about?
Maybe just to say that, you know, stand up for agriculture and, you know, don't jump to conclusions right away. I like to, as dumb as this is, I like to almost think of it as somebody getting sick and diagnosing themselves with something off the internet. I feel like that's not the way to go. You know, go to the doctor and ask, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what most people do. So why don't we go and ask the farmers instead of looking on the internet and just assuming? I think we need to listen to them and hear them out a little bit too. I'm not expecting everyone's minds to be changed right away, but I hope that everybody can start advocating for agriculture. It's a great industry and it's only going to keep growing, and we need people to stand up for it.
It reminds me of earlier today, I had to jump into one of these Facebook discussions because some friends of mine asked me to weigh in. There's a Facebook page. It's not exact, but it is fasting to stop the slaughter in 2016. So there's a group of vegans who are requesting that everybody fast to make a statement against taking the life of an animal. And I saw a couple of them. One of them was talking about pumping hormones into these animals, and I just had to weigh in. I said, Katie, why don't you find one farmer, just one farmer, that pumps hormones into these animals, and then get back to me and we'll have a discussion. And she went on and she said, maybe you should do your research before you chime in here. I said, well, actually, I'm 50 years old. I've provided daily care for more than 1 million animals. Now, what do you want to talk to me about doing research? I haven't heard from her since. Chelsea Boonstra, I got to send Kevin Folta a thank you. Thank you for joining us, but more importantly, thank you for living on the front lines, educating one person one day at a time about the importance of modern agriculture, no matter which side of the border you live on. And you have to get to Nebraska.
Yes, I definitely will try to at some point.
And you'll forget all about California once you come to Nebraska. We have successfully journeyed. Oh, where can people find you if they want to follow you?
Lots of people are following my personal Twitter account, which is cboon6. You can find me on Facebook as Chelsea Boonstra, as well Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as Forever Farm Girl. That's sort of my brand name.
That'll do it. We have successfully journeyed down the road, connecting rural and urban America, and in this case, Canada. Both Chelsea Boonstra and myself remind you that all roads do lead to a rural route.